Paul Tone Jones, and we are live on Office Hours with my co-host, co-pilot, Erica Tolbert. Erica, say hi to the people.
Hello, everyone.
I'm cracking up. So that's about as good as y'all gonna get from Erica, y'all. Sorry. I've been trying. We've been working on this pep rally. This whole idea.
Last week I was too lively. The week before that, It's all good.
Well, what's going on, Erica? Let me see. So, you know, we've had a very eventful. We always have an eventful week prior to the show. And if anybody's out there, you know, listening to the show, whether you're on Facebook, whether you're on YouTube Live, make sure that you stream this, you share this, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know what I'm saying? We want to make sure this broadcast gets out there to as many people as possible. You know, some of the things we talk about as we're trying to expand our audience, you know, we're trying to, you know, get people on board and get more, you know, I mean, more of the family out there, you know, involved in what we're doing and what we're talking about. You know, we try to break down the information from our standpoint, our viewpoint. You know, it's very rare that you get a chance to hear it from our viewpoint. Although, what I will say, one of the things I enjoy seeing with a lot of the social media, you know, nowadays, is I'm seeing that we are taking over the airwaves. You know, we got a lot of different shows, a lot of different people that are utilizing this medium for, you know, to take our information and to, you know, counterbalance the negative stigmas of who we are and the negative stigmas in terms of how the news reports us outside of, you know, and we talk about the primary broadcast stations that normally broadcast the, you know, the information or shares the information, as they call it, the fourth estate. Which we all know is just another, it's the fourth branch of government ran by the government. So, Erica, what did you do this weekend? You know, I'm always asking that question. What are you doing this weekend?
Well, I'm spending time with my kids.
Spend time
with my oldest turned 16. So I spent time with my babies this weekend. Cameron came going off the mother thing, and we got plenty of it. It was Veterans Day, so I only got a few free meals, but that's about it.
Oh, yeah, you did talk. Talk about what happened when you went to at the Olive Garden, because you experienced some not so great treatment. You know, we've had this great debate going on in this country concerning the flag, Colin Kaepernick, and how our vets are to be respected and treated. So you were out on Veterans Day. You are a veteran of the Navy, and you were, you know, on Veterans Day, there's supposed to be several restaurants or a lot of restaurants around the country that give veterans free meals, correct?
Yes, there are a ton of services offered to veterans on Veterans Day, free oil change, haircuts. It's just about everybody gives away free meals, even up until I think today, the Golden Career has set aside to give away the free meals. So I was at Olive Garden and seeing them sit down at the bar. I like to go along on Veterans Day mainly. I have to go to the bar, get my food, take a few bites, and go.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of weights on Veterans Day because everybody wants to bring their family, which to me defeats the purpose, because if you weren't planning on going out that day, you took your whole family, then meal is no longer free because you're spending extra money on everybody that you brought along. So, therefore, I go for food and I enjoy my food, and me by myself, and I enjoy my free meal.
Mm-hmm. Get to the juicy part.
Get to the bar. And...
Huh? I said, let's get to the juicy part.
Yes, so I am. I'm going to sit at the bar. And so then by the time they bought the menu or whatever, it took them another 15 minutes to even come back to ask me what I wanted to drink. Then my mother routine for a minute to ask me what I wanted to eat. But my service, it was taking them so long until the light one and I heard something was going on inside of me. She looked at me and she was like, it's taking them way too long. Why is it taking them so long with your food? I said, I don't know. They messed up my order with the case was, because they bought food out of the beach around trying to see who the food was for. The guy that waited on me was like, oh, she ordered the Parmesan. And so he was like, putting his hands by. I heard him say, I'm going to see what's going on with the food. I didn't know it was 30, 40 minutes. Which, I kind of didn't mind.
40 minutes to get your food, bro?
Georgia game. Huh?
You waited 40 minutes to get your food?
Yes, the woman that sat beside me was like, she can take it. Like, she just wasn't having it. So, of course, she brought it to their attention, made up the complaints about it. Then, so I'm like, you know, at that point, I was pulling off the bread, soup, and salad, and you know, this takes much to get me food. So, I'm ready to go at that point. I've watched enough of the game. I'm about to go. So, she was like, told them. I said something, I was like, I would get my food to go, but I don't want to wait another 15, 20 minutes for it to go by. And it really angered her that, you know, I'm sitting there and I receive the service that I receive. But, and she even told that people, the staff, like, understand the veterans there and understand you're extremely crowded. She was like, there was no reason for you to ignore her and not wait on her. The work that she did, she said, I just sit here the whole time and watch her receive bad service. And the crazy part about it is, of course, I was the only black person with the bar, but everybody else was getting catered to and taken care of. And I was sitting there, I was watching the game, and I'm like, okay, I only come here once a year for my free meal, but I don't even want to come here for a free meal anymore. It's like, it's not their food.
And see, we've been seeing these sort of habits picking up. Now, all over the country now, there was a case where there was this brother who was a real estate tycoon out in Atlanta. And he had a similar issue where he would have received, they wouldn't even allow him and his party into the restaurant. And I forget the brother's name, but yeah, you know, it's just going to the point where they're really coming out of the woodworks with, you know, how overt, you know, their racism is and their bigotry is. And for them to treat you like that in that restaurant was typical because, as you recall, and you might recall, about 15, 20 years ago, there was an incident with Denny's, where Denny's establishment sort of had like an unwritten policy to not serve black customers when they came into Denny's restaurants. And black people would go into Denny's restaurants and would literally be sitting at the table for hours on end without getting any service. So that's crazy. That's why, you know, I kind of wanted you to bring that up and sort of just to remind everybody, like, this is not new. And this is why, you know, me personally, oh, Ray Morrison. Good job, brother Patrick. Ray Morrison is the brother out in Atlanta. Shout out to my brother, Patrick Alexander, who's leading the Black Liberation Movement out of Mississippi. You know, shout out to my brother down there in Coldwater in Senatoba. And shout out to Junius Bowers, Peace King. I see that you are watching us on YouTube. So if anybody ever loses the link, or you know how Facebook does with this link, you know, sometimes it'll go down. Make sure that y'all get a chance to tune in on YouTube as well. And you'll be able to, you know, catch us. And YouTube has a little feature, guys, has the brother's name and the title of the show at the bottom. You know what I mean? You know. But it's all good. Make sure y'all share this, family, because we're about to get into the nitty gritty of the conversation now. I didn't do much this weekend. I laid around as much as I could. I did make it out to the park on Sunday for the block by block black captains, you know, thing. We make sure that we get out there every week because we have children who are waiting for us in the park every single week. You know what I'm saying? Every single week, these children from the neighborhood, they've gotten so accustomed to coming out there that we can't let them down. So, you know, I want to shout them out, you know, shout out the children that come out there every week for us and they make it worth our while. You know, it's just I'm telling you, I felt like crap all week. you know, I don't know if a lot of you probably still hear it. I'm a little congested, but, you know, just getting over the flu. I probably caught the shit from somebody that had the flu shot, which is hot. I'm just getting over the flu. So, you know, that's really, really held a brother down for a minute, but I'm back at it. You know how we do. You know how we get down. So shout out to everybody that's still down with the Black Block by Block Black Captains. You know, my brother Mitchell Chance. You know, my brother Russell Jr. You know, we were out there holding it down while we had some family out of town, some family under the weather. Get well soon, brother Atiba. You know what I'm saying? So let's get into it, Erica. Tonight, the title of this broadcast is The Reactionary Struggle. All right? You know, family, we got to talk about how reactionary we've been and how reactionary we continue to be in regards to our particular struggle with what we're dealing with in terms of our community right now. We're dealing with, you know, a lot of things, a lot of epidemics that are facing our community right now. And we are taking a stance, in my opinion, that is not prudent in terms of getting us the best reaction. Callie J, no, why weren't you at the courthouse protesting? Oh, you mean for Meek Mill? Your brother? We'll talk about the Meek Mill situation because that's part of why we're talking about it tonight. My brother Callie J wants to know, why wasn't we at the courthouse protesting? I think Rick Ross and everybody were out there in regards to the latest court case with my young brother Meek Mill, who just received 2 to 4 years for a probation violation. We're going to talk about that a little bit. You know what I'm saying? But it's not a laughing matter, beloved. It's not a laughing matter. We are reactionary to too many things. I brought up something last week in regards to suicide trending with our children. All right? And so I did a little video on it because I had spoken to somebody who told me their child was dealing with suicide ideation. They wrote it on their desk, and it caused turmoil in the family. I've been speaking to children for the last 6 months now, dealing with different types of suicidal ideation. Either they were suffering from it, or they had known somebody who had committed suicide in their schools. I talked to my nephew, who goes to one of the biggest magnet schools here in Philly, and last school year he was talking about how. You know, they had this time it was like in March, about 5 attempted suicides, you know, and two or three of them were successful. So I had brought it up in a video, and a sister had chimed in the video, basically stating that, you know, we're, that it's not trending with our children, that suicide is not trending with our children, and that, you know, that I wasn't bringing any facts to the table. And she started going to, she started pulling up, this is on the thread now, she started pulling up different articles and links. And my response to that was basically, I'm not talking about, you know, what people are talking about on Facebook, this, that, and the other. I'm talking about the fact that I've been working with children for the last 25 years. I've been working with children since I've been 18 years old. I've been working with children since I was 25 years. This year, I've dealt with tenfold the number of people talking about suicidal ideation, children and adults with suicidal ideation, and it's not a coincidence that it's trending right now. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, that really got under my skin was the fact that, and it brought a lot to my attention, we have a lot of people who are, social media activists or social media reactivists. You know what I'm saying? What I mean by that is that we don't respond to certain things unless you see it on social media. And for some people, their advocacy, because they're not activists. So their advocacy is only on social media. So you only see it on Facebook. You only see it on Twitter. You might see it in a hashtag. But these people aren't out in the streets. These people aren't walking amongst the people. So if you can't attach a link to it to certain parts of our population, they can't relate to it, which is something that we brought up a few weeks ago when we were talking about how out of touch we are with reality. In terms of if we'll read it, we'll post it, we'll talk about it, but somebody living right next to us could be suffering from it, and it'll go right over our head because we're not dealing with our reality. It's almost like the social media becomes like a movie to us, or a television show to us, or a script or something that we're reading, but we're not necessarily understanding how the information connects to the people that we're dealing with. And so right after that, I got off the phone. I got on the phone with a good friend of mine. She told me, you know, and I had known from conversation with her that she had dealt with suicide in her family. But also a little cousin of hers had committed suicide, a 10-year-old had committed suicide later on that day. All right. I spoke to Erica. Erica, you remember you 2 days later, you sent me a text message, right?
Yeah.
All right. What did your text message say?
A picture about this suicide with these kids is real. I don't remember exactly what I pictured. But it was something about suicide and kids that I had just found out on one of my kids, your cousin, who's younger than my kids, tried to kill himself. So I was like, oh my God, I think he's around 13. He tried to kill himself.
Yeah.
And that just, you know, caught me off guard. You know, this little baby who I've been born since before he was born, you know, that he tried to take his life.
And see, that's what I'm talking about. And Erica, for those of you who don't know, Erica has not been on Facebook ever since her page got hijacked. You know, ever since her page got hacked, Erica hasn't been on Facebook. She didn't even see the video that I put up in regards to the suicidal ideation trending with our children. So, you know, and I'm reading some of the quote. Peace and blessings, brother Jovan. Yes, thank you for saying that I'm on point. I appreciate that, beloved. I know that I'm out there with the people, so I just talk about what I know from being in touch with the people. Brother Jay, I know you were joking, beloved. I know you were joking. And yes, sir, you said, okay, I'm going to read the comment real quick. Just think about it. All the media shows negativity. There's nothing positive being shown. And which is one of the points that I made is that these children, there was a television series that came out on Netflix about 6 months ago that was talking about 13 Reasons Why. And I said, during that time, this, you're going to start to see a trend in our children, not just our children, but children, period, and committing suicide. Now, the one thing the sister said was, the sister that responded on the thread, from the live feed, she said that white people are 5 times as likely to commit suicide than black people. And that's all well and good, but I'm not comfortable with any black people thinking that suicide is an option, especially our babies. You got to realize the times that we live in right now, these are some rough times. This is a depressed era that we live in right now. And a lot of our people are depressed, and they're passing on to the children. And unlike the adults that are still struggling with their mental illnesses and the mental health situations that we're dealing with, our children have not developed coping skills to deal with that type of situation. They have not developed coping skills to be able to understand how to work through a problem, or when stress mounts up, how to relieve tension. You know, and this is why a lot of them are on these medications now and getting sucked into these medications in school, which makes them dulls their senses and makes them more aggressive. But a lot of the, you know, children are seeing that suicide is an option there. And that's never a good thing. You know what I'm saying? That's never a good thing. You know what I'm saying? Brother, I'm not going to say brother. Something just popped up on my screen. excuse me. So, you know, one of the things that I would like for us to start doing is being more proactive in regards to addressing these situations so that they don't become, you know, epidemics in our community. And Erica, that's one of the issues that I'm having right now, is the fact that right now, Black America, the attention has been off of us for the most part since Trump has been in office. He's been going after immigrants. He's been going after, he's been talking about building walls. He's been talking shit with North Korea. And basically what you've seen is sort of a calm before the storm in regards to what's happening. why aren't Black people right now building for, you know, to build towards Black empowerment, so that when this tide that we know is coming, because this train is never late, they don't forget about us. When it comes, why aren't we getting our shit together now?
Because mainly we don't know how. But you touched on something, definitely, because I know this, the kid's cousin who tried to commit suicide. Of course, I know him personally, so I know more about his background. And one thing I can say, what we have to stop doing as a whole, as a community, this kid's mother, I learned a lot from his parents picking up. His father was a straight A student in college making a dean's year. His mother was a hood rat. His mother was a hood rat. And I remember when they first, you know, got together, we would tell the cousin, like, you know, you don't want to mess with her. You know, she's not going anywhere. She already had a child. The guy's father had the baby, and she just had no goals, no ambition. So when a husband have no goals and ambition, and they don't see up, and all they see is down, it's going to bring you down. Years now he has custody of all three of these kids. Then he's gotten by her. He had to drop out of school. So she's out doing a lot of things. And the boy probably suffers from depression because he don't see his mom. You know, there's a lot of drama that comes along with when your parents don't make it together. You know, some Black kids feel inadequate when they don't have both parents in a home. It affects the child emotionally, financially, mentally, and at 10, and you're the oldest, it seems like the weight of the world is on you because you don't have, you know, you have your father there to protect and supply. You don't have your mother there to nurture you, and that's needed for a young boy coming up, especially when he's the oldest and he's looking out for his other siblings. Mm-hmm. Anyway, those things, the perfect storm for mental instability within a child. It's the perfect storm for a dysfunctional child to become a dysfunctional adult who will go up to raise more dysfunctional kids within our community. So, before we make these babies, make sure your mate is mentally prepared to handle what comes along with the relationship. We got to learn that sex isn't the cure it all for the issues in our lives. Because again, the last thing we need to do when we have such mental dysfunction within our community is to continue to breed kids within that mental dysfunction. Because all we keep doing is making our foundation of the Black community on mental dysfunction. And the foundation is everything. And that's why we see so many kids now in our community not strong enough to sustain certain things because A, we're too individualistic, we're too materialistic, and that we are a community that can't afford either one of those. Our foundation needs to be brought back on love, that village and togetherness, because without that, we're going to see more of our kids out here thinking that it's easier to end their lives than to deal with the problem. You know, they're not strong. They're not taught how to be strong because they're being raised to be mentally weak.
And you know, and that's a great point too. We're not doing any planning. And that goes back to the reactionary thing. You know what I'm saying? That goes back to us being we're even reactionary when it comes to rearing a family. And we need to get to the point where we start literally interjecting critical thinking back into, you know, our day-to-day operations. We need to interject critical thinking in terms of what we're teaching our children, in terms of how to weigh the pros and cons of the situation. And we need to learn it because obviously a lot of children are being brought into the world right now based on reactionaries, based on hormones, based on us not thinking with the little head, not the big head all the time. And we're not moving towards being progressive in terms of actually planning a family. And a family needs planning. There's no, I'm in love, let's have a baby, and let's try to figure the shit out. You're supposed to have the foundation in place first. And this is one of the biggest problems we're having right now, specifically when we don't have, our houses are broken. You know, our family structures are broken. Our relationships between Black men and women are broken. And we're not planning on even fixing those things. We'd rather have a yelling match. We'd rather play the blame game. We'd rather do all these different things than put together a family unit. And then we start, when the community faces a crisis, we ourselves turn to, you know, turn into anarchy because we don't even have a plan in place for how to deal with catastrophes when we face them. And let's be clear about something. A lot of activists that are out here right now are basically reactionary to situations and circumstances they've been a part of. Somebody asked me the other day, what is it going to take for us to get Black people, specifically Black men, to come out and to be a part of the community again? And I honestly said, I don't know. I wish I had an answer, because if I had the answer, we'd get more brothers out. I wish I could say it'd be for the compassion for our children. I wish I could say for the desire to make our community great. I wish I could say to stand able and accounted for. But I can't say those things because all those points have been brought to the table and we still have people pushing away the plate. You know what I'm saying? That's brothers, that's sisters, and that's everybody. And then we heap and blame the children and we blame the elders. You know, so we have to start planning. We have to start planning how we're going to deal with a lot of these different situations that we're coming up on right now, because this, we're all up against. I'm seeing a lot of things right on social media. I'm going to tell you all now. I don't really comment on a lot of posts. I really don't have time or the energy. I'm really efficient with my time and energy on social media. But when it comes to a lot of things I've been seeing a lot of stuff, specifically the divisive shit. Now you have Black people who say that they're not African, they're Native American. You have Black people in America saying that we're Black Americans, we have nothing to do with our African diaspora, and vice versa. We have people from Caribbean islands saying they don't want nothing to do with Blacks here in America, this, that. Don't y'all realize that each and every one of these segments of society has been impacted by colonialization of the European? Each and every faction, the Caribbean islands have been infected by the indoctrination. In fact, that was the place where white supremacy was beaten into a lot of our ancestors. White supremacy was beaten into, you know, a lot of y'all better go out and check out the history of what is it? It's a specific island in the Caribbean where they actually beat this. They created the process for how they would maintain slavery on the plantations. So it's going to come to me in a minute. So give me a minute, but I know it's in the Caribbean. And then you have Africa, which has been under colonial rule longer than America has. So a lot of people don't realize, when you talk about Africans, in order for the Africans to come to America, do you know that brothers and sisters in Africa have to go through a whole ritual? They have to go through a whole process where they're indoctrinated with videos, and they're indoctrinated with all these stereotypes about what Black Americans are and how they're not to intermingle with Blacks, and that to get their visas to come to America, that they have to score a certain way on the test in order to earn their visa. So the Africans that make it into America are already brainwashed. The same way that Blacks once upon a time, and probably still are, brainwashed into thinking that all of Africa is still third world country, and that all of Africa is still a place where, you know, people are walking around with bones in their noses, with big ass afros, and throwing spears and hiding in the jungle and shit. You know what I'm saying? There's still people who actually think that there's a jungle in Africa. You know what I'm saying? So we have to understand that we have all been colonized under this European to keep us divided, and it's the same European. The same European. You know, but let that be told. We have, we have crisis coming. A crisis coming upon our community now. And if we're not prepared for it, this whole gentrification thing is about to kick up another notch. What are we doing for that? I'm watching people move in. I'm watching Mexicans work on my block, on my fucking block. I'm watching Mexicans work on my block. You know what I'm saying? And building up, fixing up houses for non-blacks. They work in these houses. They don't own them. They're fixing them up. And I see who's moving around here, and it's not black folk. I see the writing on the wall. And we talk about gentrification as though it's a story for somebody else to deal with, not our story to deal with. And this is what I'm talking about with us being reactionaries. As my brother Patrick said before, that we are reactionaries. And we, how can you have a revolution if everybody's just waiting for some shit to happen to react to? And then we don't even really have a plan. But when some stuff does happen, that's why you always have people talking about take it to the streets. Erica, did you vote last time out, this previous election, last week, did you vote?
First vote, there was no elections in my area.
There was some minor elections in my area, but I didn't vote. Fuck that. And I'm going to tell y'all why I didn't vote. I didn't vote because, once again, voting is a reaction. Voting is a reaction to all the different things that are going on around us right now, because what we have in our community, we don't have any sense of what real politics is and how politics work. If the only time you deal with politics is on election day, then you have no idea about how politics work. And we ourselves are operating from a deficit, once again, where people aren't held accountable. I'm bringing this up because there was a sister that she's currently a judge, a circuit judge here in Philadelphia. And she was the one, everybody's talking about the Meek Mill case. And I'm only going to spend a few minutes on this. But as everybody probably knows, Meek Mill's probation was revoked. They said he had violated his probation, popping wheelies, and performing out of state without permission. And basically, he was railroaded 2 to 4 years. You know, he had received. Now, in terms of his sentence, nobody can argue that that it was within her parameters to give him that sentence. But the issue is comes down to is the fact that we have rapists all around the country who have been getting, suspended sentences. You know, Brock Turner comes to mind. Brock Turner raped a girl.
Being a fool.
Huh?
They're too affluent to go to jail. That's what they say.
Well, affluenza, and so basically he got six months, a suspended sentence of 6 months, so he got 6 months probation because the judge said he didn't want the judgment to ruin his future. All right? But this is another white judge looking out for him. Now, we have a black judge here in Philadelphia who was voted in office, 2013, she received 78% of the precinct's votes, to be elected for circuit judge. And she's been elected, this sister, and she was going now. Here's the fishy part about this whole thing. She was rumored to have wanted Meek Mill to sign a record label, to sign to a friend of hers, a record label that belonged to a friend of hers, and to leave Roc Nation, right? She also was not rumored, but she showed up.
No, he's with someone else.
No, he's a subsidiary of Roc Nation. It's a subsidiary of Roc Nation. He's with Rick Ross, but a subsidiary of Roc Nation. So
okay, I thought his record label, Rick Ross's record label, was something else. But okay, anyway.
And in addition to that, she showed up to one of his community service. He had to do his community service hours, and she showed up to the site where he was doing his community service. And that's unprecedented. A judge doesn't go into to supervise or to witness, community service specifically. So she was obviously starstruck here. And we have a bad situation here where, unfortunately, we can still elect people who look like us, but they don't serve us in the community. You know what I'm saying? They don't serve us. And this is what I'm talking about when I say elections. We in Philadelphia, we've had, prior to this year, we've had about 16 years of black mayor, black mayors, actually, no, 20 years. Not even been 30 years. No, Rendell ended in 96, I believe. So we have about 16 years of black mayors between, you know, John Street, and then we had this other fucker that came right after him. They both sold the community down the river. Did nothing for black people in this city. Did nothing but allow for gentrification to take place. We've had a black-run city council for the last 20 years. Done nothing but open the floodgates for gentrification. We currently have situations right now in this city where all the people who went out and voted and kept these Negroes, these Democratic Negroes in charge, are sitting there complaining about situations that are happening in our communities and so forth. But yet and still, the same politicians are the same ones that show up for photo ops but do very little else. Now, hopefully we have a situation that's going on this week where we're going to be dealing with this whole parking authority situation. Philadelphia Parking Authority, these sons of bitches. Let me tell you about the crazy shit they got going on. So I don't know if any other city has an agency that parks, that gives parking tickets out or whatever. If you do, shout it out. But here in Philadelphia, we got this thing called the Parking Authority. And now they have this new policy, another sister in charge, and she's in charge of this whole agency right now. She's the interim director, and she came up with this policy where they're going to go back 20 years, over 20 years, and any unpaid parking ticket in your name, they're going to hold you accountable for and give you 90 days to pay. Now, here's the gist of it. Parking Authority has a terrible track record of tracking the tickets that you actually pay. So you can pay for a ticket multiple times. We call those phantom tickets. Here's the irony. I called them up because I received a letter in the mail about some bullshit. I called them up and said, well, what's going on? They said, well, you have 12 tickets in your name. And I said, 12 unpaid parking tickets, which is crazy because I don't ever remember receiving 12 parking tickets. Total, right? So 12 unpaid parking tickets, okay. Goes back to the first one goes back to 1988. Now, it totally slipped my mind at the time. I'm thinking, damn, y'all went back to 1988? That's bullshit, right? What do you think about that, Erica? 1988?
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
You know how long ago it was? I was fucking 14 years old in 1988. How the hell do I have a parking ticket at 14 years old? This is the scam.
They just looked up a Carl Jones. You ever Carl Jones in Philadelphia?
But this
and
is
I'm quite sure the other Carl Jones got one too.
That's what this is the type of scamming shit that I'm talking about, though. I'm fucking 14 years old, so I don't even know what tickets are in my name at this time. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we got some. There's a hearing going on this Thursday. If anybody's interested, there's a hearing going on. At City Hall, I will post the information on my page on Facebook. Make sure y'all follow up. But that's another story. Yeah, Brother Julius, I was fucking 14 years old. 14. How about that? You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? So it's crazy, and so we gotta start holding. This is what I mean about being able to hold, you know, understand politics and how to work and get the politics together. Parking Authority shouldn't even be a legal apparatus in this city. They shouldn't have a legal authority in Philadelphia. You know what I'm saying? Man, I did not steal Pop-Up's car because over here lying on me and shit. I wasn't 14 back then. I might have been 14. They didn't catch me though. Anyway, that wouldn't have been a parking ticket. My cousin said I stole my grandfather's car one day.
Yeah, I believe it.
Oh, yeah, we did steal the car that day. I ain't gonna lie, we did steal the car. but we didn't get caught, and the car wasn't in my name. So, there.
So you thought.
Oh, shit.
Well, big brother
I
always
lie. Shit, you ain't lying about that. Shit, my grandfather might have put the car in my name. Ain't no goddamn way we put anything else in everybody else's child name. So, So let's get to this whole thing about, right now there's this policy right now that's happening. This thing, the politician Roy Moore in Alabama. Roy Moore is running for office, for political office, and now they're talking about the fact that Roy Moore has he was fondling or trying to, he's given alcohol and trying to sexually induce or have sexual relations with a 14-year-old when he was 32 years old, right?
They said it's known and it's a common fact that he dated younger women, or women, girls in their teens.
Right.
It was common knowledge that he dated women.
So here's the deal. Instead of everybody trashing this man like what happened with Bill Cosby, you have CNN, Fox pundits, news pundits all over the country running and caping for this man, talking about how these stories are conveniently coming up during a crucial election, and how we shouldn't be paying attention to stories that are 20 and 30 years old, how there should be a statute of limitations in terms of how we even cover this type of news. And I'm saying, this is the shit that I'm talking about when I talk to brothers and sisters about playing this game of reform politics, or trying to reform white supremacy. You cannot reform white supremacy. Why? Or you cannot play by the rules. Why? Because when you play by the rules, as soon as the rules don't fit them, they want to change the fucking rule. They want to change how the media covers this type of stuff now. Now that all of these white degenerates are coming out, I mean, the people are coming out and identifying these white degenerates, these white males, as being the sexual predators that they are, you know, now all of a sudden there's a big pushback in the media and all these other places, you know, and in the media and all these other places, there's this big pushback for, excuse me, to identify, to leave these people alone, to leave these distinguished gentlemen alone, you know, to not hold them accountable for their dastardly deeds, their malevolence towards women. And this is what, see, this is one of the things I've been saying for a long time. We got to start calling a spade a spade. You know, we can't say, you know, when and start talking in safe language, like we said before, how the people get safe with the language when it comes to holding white males accountable, white people in particular, or white males accountable. And so instead of saying white males, they'll say stuff like men, period, or they'll say Republicans, or they'll say conservatives, or they'll say, you know, something of that nature, but they won't identify white males as their own demographic when it comes to being guilty of these sexual, you know, predatory things. And this is one of those times where I am trying to get black people to understand. When they start putting rules, when they start putting laws and policies on the book for all this perverted sexual behavior by these white males, be careful, because while they'll use these white faces to put the pressure to create these sex crime laws, watch who they start enforcing that shit on. They're going to utilize that to enforce it, bring it back to the black community, as they always have, to target us. And that's why we have to start being proactive and getting our game together. We have to stop with the divisive politics and start focusing on being loyal to one another. I don't care if you want to unify, but let's be loyal to one another in regards to what's to come. Because what's to come is eventually they're setting everything up, all their ducks in a row right now. We don't have any allies. Just be plain. We don't have any allies. You know what I'm saying? My brother Cali J said the rules apply according to the person in the situation. Yeah, the white person in the situation. It's called spade a spade. See, I'm not going to allow for them to consistently escape their punishment, or to escape their judgment when it comes to being to having to deal with this. You know, because it's crazy, Erica. I brought this up a few weeks ago, right? And Then you start posting an online conversation about how prevalent and how much white on white crime we're seeing all of a sudden.
Yep.
It's just crazy because, you know, and it was something that happened this weekend. We were at the park. We were talking about, there was a guy who broke the story for the real Rick Ross, when he had a real freeway Rick Ross drug story. There was a reporter, Gary something. Damn it, why are these names slipping my mind tonight? I don't know. But somebody in the chat room, give me the name, Gary. Give me a minute. I'll look it up my damn self. But let me see. Gary. Let me see. Gary Webb. There we go. Gary Webb's death, right? Gary Webb. Now this is why I don't fuck. This is why I don't believe none of the stats, the official crime stats that you get all over the country. Gary Webb was killed with 2 gunshots to the head. Do you know what they ruled that as, Erica? Yes, they ruled his death as a damn suicide. See, this is why I don't trust none of none of the stats that you hear when you talk about crime, when you talk about who commits what, you talk about how when white people kill black people, they never consider it, you know, a hate crime, but they always reach and go, and when it's the other way around, it's a hate crime. And that's how they fuck up the whole all the statistics. Peace out, Tariq. I see you over there. I see you over there on YouTube. Brother Bowers, thank you, good brother. Junius, I see you on YouTube as well. Al Tariq, no more chain letters, bruh. You know what I'm talking about. Let me see. Brother Al Tariq said, if genocide and chattel slavery had been justified, then why shouldn't they feel they can't get away with what they've gotten away with so far, or gotten away with? They do feel as though they can get away with whatever they can get away with. They don't have any fucking rules. That's the whole point I'm trying to make. They don't have any rules that they follow. They get us to follow the rules. They don't follow none of the rules. So this is why, you know, when we start talking about, you know, societal and immorality and things of that nature, I don't fall prey to that shit. I don't fall prey to any way where people say, any way, shape, or form that black people should respond a certain way, how we should be nonviolent. I don't subscribe to that whatsoever. Whenever you see this European anywhere in the world, they send peace troops to places all over the world. Peace troopers. These peace troopers are armed with machine guns, armed with body armor, tanks, all sorts of shit, and they go and occupy places with military force. When they come into your neighborhoods, they bring the force of the law to put you out of your houses and out of your community. They don't play that peaceful shit. Sit on your step and tell them you're not moving and see if they don't apply force to move you off your property. You know what I'm saying? They've only convinced us because they know that we don't want any real smoke when it comes to dealing with white folks. I keep telling black folk all the time, just come clean and say you scared of white people. You know, I get a whole bunch of people in the comment section, I ain't scared of these white motherfuckers. Okay. But when these white motherfuckers show up and they show up with their badges and their guns and they show up with all this and the other, we learn how to speak the king's English. We start talking proper. We start, you know, sitting up and abrupt in a chair. We start, making sure we have certain type of mannerisms. We do all sorts of shit to make sure that we're on code with how they want us to behave. And we follow their instruction. Very rarely do you see us, you know, looking to create an independent community. We look, you know, brother Shamari, my brother Keith, Eric Keith Grimes, posted that he was down in Atlanta, and he said we have too many liberals and not enough liberators, and that's very true. We don't have enough people in our community that want to be liberated, but we don't really have a choice with this black identity extremist situation that they're creating. You're not going to have a choice. You know, they are flagging us in places where we can't even utilize a lot of the things. Now, yes, this is their apparatus. Social media is their apparatus. So we need to be right now, while we're taking over social media, we need to be contemplating a way to create our own version of the internet, our own social media outlets, our own ways of communication, because eventually, if we ever do get organized with this, they will cut this shit off. They will take it away. You know what I'm saying? They will take it away. So we have to start stepping up our game in regards to that, you know?
Now, I will say this. They show up to your house and they got a whole bunch of guns, and your life is in jeopardy. I would hope that you would live to see another day and live to tell the story.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can't fight a battle dead. So we always got to be smart. And I get what you're saying. We always got to be smart about the way we maneuver through the system, but it was a real to tell the story to fight another day. Well, in the end, with the whole the senator, the Republican that's running for senator in Alabama, we have to realize again that of course they're going to fix the laws to meet their Republican agenda to get what they want. In the end, it's always about what they want and how to strengthen white supremacy in the end, and this is somebody that represents what they want and need out of a white supremacist in a lawmaking field.
Mm-hmm.
But we always got to remember that I had a friend who told me, her grandmother, and I've heard this saying a lot. She always say, if white people catch a cold, black people can catch the flu. Mm-hmm. We have to always remember that in every aspect of everything that goes on in this country, we're never immune to anything that goes on in this country. Because at the end of the day, when we're just a minority, anything that happens to them, it happens to us eventually, but it hits us a lot harder than it does them. Back to the suicide thing, if you got one out of every 10 kids, white kids, could commit suicide, and one out of every 10 black kids commit suicide, we're losing more bodies than they are.
Yeah.
Because they have more, they're the dominant society in this country. So again, we have to realize that even if they do make a law or change a law where they have their sex offenders going to jail, and it's one out of 10 of their sex offenders or one out of 20 of their sex offenders that go to jail, and it's one out of 10 for ours, it's more of us going to jail than them. Now, my thing is, we need 10 out of 10 of our sex offenders going to jail. They need to be outcast from our communities and our society anyway. We need no sex offenders. They should not be protected, because all they do is continue to damage our community. But again, we have to realize that anytime these laws go into effect, how they're going to affect us and how it affects them and the meaning behind every law that they put into place. We don't look at it because into the Meek Mill thing, you touched on a lot of subjects. It's amazing how we preach we need more judges. We don't need more judges in our community to Meek Mill it, to give someone 4 years that didn't deserve 4 years. We need more black judges so that we could get the lenient sentences when we deserve them. Tell a white judge could have schooled him the way that he got schooled.
Right.
That's not the purpose of us moaning black police officers. We want black police officers so that when I get pulled over for doing 70 and a 65, he could say, hey, you know what, just slow down. Because that's what we want more of us and our faces. There's going to be any, so that we can get off at the same rate that they get off. It does us no justice if I get pulled over by a black police officer. He want to throw the book at me to prove, you know, that he's a part of the good old boys gang. That's not what you're there for. You're there to give us lenient sentences within reason, if anything. And again, he a pedophile, and he didn't rape somebody. No way in hell, if a black man raped a black woman, you should say, you know what? I'm a Brock Turner, you won't give me 6 months probation. Now give his ass the book. Let them know your job is to protect black women, not to harm them. But we have a situation where a black person has did a petty crime or a violent probation, depending on the, you know, what they done. Give somebody 4 years for popping a wheelie and for going out making money. And Meek Mill's, I'm quite sure, spend his money in Philadelphia because he reps Philadelphia so hard. I'm sure there's a lot to get back into his community. There's a lot of things I don't care for when it comes to Meek Mill. But at the end of the day, when we become judges and prosecuting attorneys and police officers, whenever we're in the criminal justice system, we should position ourselves to be more lenient towards one another when it's fitting, not to throw the damn book. Because again, tell a white man could have did this. And I guarantee you, a white man, a white judge, male judge, when he gave me this sentence, I guarantee you there's no way that a white male judge could have did this. I don't believe he would have. He probably would have gave him 4 more years of probation or something like that, or some more community service, or even something minor. I don't feel like judge giving him 4 years off of the offenses that, you know that he was charged with.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that back up, because in regards to that particular situation, we don't need, and this is why I say, and we talked about this earlier, about the fact that why is it that we have so many of us that take jobs and positions that hurt black people? You know, when you talk about I'm not speaking specifically to the judge. You know, we do need black judges that are going to cater to black people. There was a time in traffic court where there was this brother who happened to be a judge, and I went, and he saw me, I looked at him, the brother waved me to the front, asked the clerk to pull on my, the ticket or whatever, and he tore up the citation and sent me on my way. You know what I'm saying? That was the brother doing what he was supposed to do. You know what I'm saying? And we have too many times in these situations, you know, we have black folks that do the bidding of, you know, their white masters. And that this situation right here, it was a power play. You know, it was a power play, unfortunately. And we got too much of that going on in our community. You know, and so you talk about police officers, right? And I have a question as to why is it that black people take on these positions and roles, whether you want to be a police officer, whether you want to work for the parking authority. You know, these places are flooded with black employees. Why do you take on roles that consistently hurt black people? Because you don't go into these particular offices and change the culture. You go into these offices and you become the arm of the oppressors. So why do y'all, you know, so why is it that we have so many black people willing to do this? And I understand it's because we don't have a moral compass, and our moral compass is so screwed up that we have more loyalty to a paycheck than we do to our community. I understand that. I also understand, you know, culture, we're culturally and morally bankrupt when it comes to culture, you know. But these are the questions we need to start asking, because as soon as you start shutting down places like the PPA, the first thing they're going to tell you is, well, damn, look at all the black people who are out of work. And I'm like, fuck them. I'll be perfectly honest. I'd rather you be out of work. You know, I have not met one person from the PPA that I like, not one single soul. I have not walked up and down the block and saw one person working for the PPA that I felt like extending a kind gesture to. Not one. Black, white, Latino, whatever. There was one dude, I was ready to throw his ass in the middle of the street because he wrote a ticket on my car and there was still time on the meter. You know what I mean? So, you know what I'm saying? This is the type of shit that I'm talking about when you know, we start talking about our people and how we respond to things. You don't ever see another culture doing something that's damning to their community. But we have so many people lining up to do damning shit to our community. And they work in the various places and they do the most harm. And they do the worst, and they treat us the worst in a lot of cases. And sometimes it makes you wake up in the morning like, man, who the fuck am I fighting for? But then I realized we got these babies out here who are defenseless because these assholes ain't doing what they're supposed to be doing in terms of, you know, creating a safe place for them in the community. And then bring in a community to a point where, you know, we can actually be self-sustaining and operating, self-operative or operating, and we don't have to be dependent on, you know, these draconian systems that are in place that have done nothing but preyed upon the poor and the disenfranchised in our community.
Well,
The whole thing, but I'm gonna get also want to get back to what you were saying about the sex offender thing too. Because I want to be clear. When we talk about sex offenders going to jail, I want people who have committed sexual offenses to get thrown under the jail. All right? People who have legitimately committed it. Not people who have been framed, not people who have been where it's questionable as to whether or not some sexual offense took place. Like if there's a situation where somebody brushes against you or whatever, and I'm not justifying anything, but there are a lot of questionable cases now being put into the forefront, like the street harassment thing, where you can literally, if they pass the policies and laws that they're trying, you can literally get a citation and go to jail for saying, hi, how you doing to somebody, if they can say or prove that they've been, you know, afraid. And that's a slippery slope. We have to remember that George Zimmerman got away with killing Trayvon Martin because he said he feared for his life. Not because he could prove it, because he said he feared for his life. And it's a similar slippery slope. And we do realize that as black people, we don't get the benefit of the doubt, whether it's a black man or a black woman. A black woman making an accusation, if it's not a black man at the other end of that, her history is scrutinized. Her background is scrutinized. Black man, if he's blamed, his history, everything, he's guilty, and you have to go prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he's innocent. So, you know, I'm very questionable, and I step lightly on this particular situation because, because the way we move, you know what I'm saying, we're not in a position to protect each other right now. And we're not even in a position to be on the same page when it comes to defending ourselves against these types of situations. Right now I'm reading some of the quotes. But I agree with you on that particular stance, Erica, but I just know that just like in the past, they've created laws and policies, you know, where they identify black men who as these sexual predators, and they have to protect white women. And you know, I'm just always cautious of that, because I know that under different situations and predicaments, you can find yourself, you know, feeding into a paranoia that feeds to a particular piece of propaganda that weaponized the whole idea of us being black men. You know what I'm saying? So I'm very, very careful about that, because I know the history behind it. And a lot of people who are dealing with, you know, the emotions of things that are happening, they wanted to be brought into lexicon, they're not looking big picture. Big picture, you know, as I've often said, there are conversations we need to have in-house, and there are conversations we need to have for the broader audience. The conversation between how black men and women relate needs to be an in-house conversation. Unfortunately, we have a lot of people who just, you know, really want the attention that comes to putting the other half of the demographic on blast. And what happens is, you know, there's not real support. You get a lot of attention, but not support from the dominant society, because it still feeds to their agenda of fracturing the black family. Erica?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's gonna always be some people who are bitter about this situation, especially a lot of black women. I can't speak for black men because I don't be around them at the rate that I be around black women, but they're always gonna be upset about their personal situations, that they're always gonna feel the need to bash black men in the public eye. They're not ready to heal because they feel so comfortable, and they feel more validated as a victim than they do as someone who is trying to heal from, you know, their past relationship with the opposite sex. But again, it takes a mature person who comes to the point that they say, hey, you know, this is a bigger picture. this isn't about myself or my experience. It's with the opposite sex. We have to heal because a lot of the women who are bitter about black men, they had a black boy. And there's no way you can raise a healthy black boy and turn him into a healthy black man and you hate black men. It's not going to happen. There's no way you're going to teach a black man to have self-love and self-respect and you hate black men. Because you secretly hate your son because you fear what he's going to become. So, you know, it's just some people that they'll pick up on it once they see the train moving. And some people who have to realize they can never be saved.
You know, and I feel you because, and that's actually the way I feel about the majority of the community. Unfortunately, the majority of the community is in a position right now where we're not going to be able to save everybody, unfortunately. And that's the whole allegory of the story of Noah's Ark, is that you can't put everybody on the ark. Everybody's not even going to want to get on the ark until it's too late. And then they'll be reacting to the storm. Mm-hmm. You know, the story of Noah's Ark should be taught everywhere because it's about being, prepared. It's about being proactive about the storm that's yet to come. And if anybody wanted to really take that allegory and understand how to function and how we should be moving, that's one story that should be taught to all children. It should be taught to everybody, but it should be taught to our children so they understand the ways that are to prepare for what is to come, what may come, and that way you're always prepared. There was a situation recently where people were talking about there were going to be this EMP bomb that was supposed to go off, where it was supposed to render the entire country powerless. And they were telling people to prepare for it. A lot of people made light of it. And, I had a little fun with it. But at the same time, it's all about being prepared. Because if the shit does happen, no, I'm not going to say if, when it happens, will we be prepared to deal with it? How much water do you have? Do you have water, the ability to purify water? How long can you purify water? Because people don't realize how fast the water gets contaminated. We don't realize how fast when shit happens, how quickly it happens. We were talking in class the other day about how when things go down, it goes down so fast that you really don't realize it. And because a lot of us don't experience it head on, we don't really have an understanding in terms of, how fast the shit happens, how fast that, somebody getting killed, how it can just literally, happen within the 2 to 3 minutes set, moment on the street. You know what I'm saying? And in 30 seconds, it can go from what's up to somebody's head being peeled open. Altercations taking place, people getting their heads blown off. You know what I'm saying? We really don't understand how fast these things can happen until they happen to you. So we need to start being more proactive and understanding that, preparation is the key to being able to handle any situation. Preparation drills. How do you get out of the city if there's a blackout? You know what I'm saying? And you need to get to somewhere safe. How do you go? Do you have a route to take? Well, how do you communicate with your family members if the cell phone towers go down, like they did when 9/11 happened, and nobody can make a phone call all day? How do you deal with the situation where, something simple. We rely so much on cell phones that if the cell phone goes down, how do you contact somebody that you can't see? Do you know to meet at a certain person's house if this shit goes down? People, this is not like a sci-fi story. This shit is real. And we can't get it through to the people to understand that until it happens. You know what I'm saying? Right as we speak, there are people right now that would rather tune into the football game. You know what I'm saying? Rather tune into the basketball game. Rather prepare for, we'll prepare for a party. I've seen that, one of my favorites, and she is a sister that's coming into to Philly to perform. I can't even remember her name, but I know she's one of my favorites. I'm really not an entertainer like that, but and I see a whole bunch of people on the post talking about, I'm planning to be here, I'm planning to be there. I'm like, you could plan for all this shit, but can you plan for a disaster that most likely will happen sometime in your lifetime? Do you plan to meet up and link up with your children? I mean, shit, we don't even have a plan for if our cell phone battery goes dead. Not like a blackout, but if your own personal cell phone. So these are, you know, we have to start being more proactive because we're reactionary way too much, and we're too much of a fallback society with things that are priorities and should be priorities. And we should have, of all people, we should know that if some shit happened, the government is going to pick us last to come and rescue. In fact, they're going to be we're going to be target practice to a lot of people, specifically those of us who end up on that red list. And for those of you who don't know what the red list is, you need to look it up. So, you know, Erica, we've been on for a little over an hour now. You know, it's always time for us to break it down. Wonderful time talking with you again this evening. Do you have any parting shots for the people?
My usual, check out Brother Joseph Ward on the Shoulder of Giants. Check out his site. He has some nice shirts that he put out. I don't know if they get me on there. Keep forgetting to go to his site to
get my
shirt. But I saw your picture of yours. He has a curriculum. Check that out. Check out the Codes of Conduct. www.pactsinc.org. Check out calls. It's crazy. My baby girl asked me about a What About Us shirt. I had to call on yesterday so he could hear her, my baby asking him about the What About Us shirt. And after I got off the phone with him, she said, "How long is it going to take him to get me my shirt?" I said, "Just wait until they got to get made."
Those are coming.
It's a lot of good things going on. When Carl talked about us being reactionary, if you go to PAC Inc. website, go to www.pactsinc.org, there's a lot of information on there. And I keep telling y'all that the site that Patrick put together is just phenomenal. There's a lot of features on there from our elders. There's a mentorship program. There's just so much on that site. And I used to often reference it to somebody build you a house. And they said you can move into this house, all of the bills, all of the furnished, everything paid for. What's taking you so long or keeping you from moving in this house? And that site, that organization, we build a house, just vacant. You know, we can't get you to move in because for whatever reason, you're waiting on someone else to save you. But as you stated, motto is, we are what we've been waiting for, not the organization, we as the people. We are what we've been waiting for. We don't need anyone to save us. We are our own saviors. Go to that site, look around. If you have any questions, I told Carl I was going to get back on Facebook soon. I plan to, but truthfully, I've been enjoying the break from it, the energy that's put out on Facebook sometimes from the conscience, the non-conscious, the Black empowerment. I mean, everybody gives off a energy, and some of the energy that's on Facebook is draining. And I haven't missed being on Facebook. And I used to be addicted to Facebook. I haven't missed it not one bit because I feel a weight. I'm not as stressed from reading some of the stuff that I read. I'm not as worried from seeing some of the ignorance that I've seen on Facebook. So this break that I've been on Facebook since 2007 and never took a break. This is a daily thing to be on Facebook. Well, occasionally I would take a month or so off. But anywho, I would definitely, I'm going to get back on Facebook so I can start promoting everybody and networking again. But definitely go to these sites, visit these sites, join these organizations. If you need to get in touch with me, you can always hit Carl up. Carl, know how to put everybody in touch with me where I can tell you more about the organization if you have time. But like Carl said, we do a lot of playing around. But But it's not a matter of if, but when some of these things are going to occur. And sometimes we need to learn how to unplug just to think. Because truthfully, 99.9% of us cannot think without being told what to think about. We don't come up with any original thoughts. Think about how many original thoughts you come up with a day. And think about how many of those thoughts are placed in your mind from the news, the social media, and all these other influences around you. Sometimes it's best to break away from that or connect and network with people that could have you thinking on a higher frequency than the football game, than what's on reality TV, what's going on Empire. And I know 9 out of 10, if you listen to this show, you probably not into those anyway. But we have to learn how to connect and network with a different energy that's going to put us on a different plan field, a different plane that's going to elevate us to learn to be independent. Because if you're around slaves, they're not going to teach you and talk to you about being free. But their mind is not on freedom. Their mind is on how they're going to continue to be slaves and what they're going to do to make slavery better for them. They're not going to think about independence. If you surround yourself with people that's thinking about independence and being free, you're going to start coming up with ways on how to be independent and how to be free. Being on the collective whole, you're going to put those ideas into action, and that's how the revolution starts. It's it. I'm sorry. I went off on a tangent.
No, that's pretty good. That was pretty good. I like that. That's right. Don't can't hang around people with slavish mindsets and thinking that you're going to move towards independence and freedom. Just like Erica said, a slave is only looking to better their quarters or better their place on the plantation. We're looking to get the hell off the plantation. So, you know, keep a lookout, because, you know, now that I'm, you know, my health is back in check, you know, I mean, I, you know, put on a good front sometimes. You know, I was sick as a dog last week on the show. I'm pretty good right now. You know, back on track with getting the project done. Be on the lookout for it. I'm finishing up a new poster that's actually going to be the cover of the Independence Day Project movie. So be on the lookout for that as well. I want you to keep tabs on the blackindependence.org website, because we're going to be updating that shortly as well. And we're going to consistently, if you are in the Philadelphia region and you're trying to do something in the community, reach out to us. Come out on Sundays. We are available in the park. You know, it's the best place to link up with us. If the temperature is above 40 degrees, which is supposed to be this upcoming Sunday, and it's not raining, we'll be out there working with the Block by Block Black Captains. You know what I'm saying? Family, do what you can. It's cool for y'all for us to be on the internet and doing all these good things. You know how we're taking over social media. That's wonderful. One of the things we need to also start doing is coming and getting off the book, as Erica said, and getting out into the streets where you can see the people, have be in touch with the people, and get an understanding of the feeling. Because you can't fight for the people if you don't know the people. You have to be amongst the people to know the people and to feel their energy and to feel their love and to feel their struggle before we get on here and we start, you know, becoming more judgmental about a situation that's foreign to us, because we have been, we've been fenced off. And we haven't been in those areas where those people, where the people that we claim to love and claim to be fighting for reside. We have to be amongst the people, walk amongst the people, touch the people, feel the energy of the people, engage with the people, and talk to the people to find out what the people need. So with that, family, get out of the house and get involved. Get involved, family. Let's be proactive in this measure, because you can't love a people if you're distant from them. So let's get out there and love the people and be a part of the people. And like I said, family, as always, family, you know, peace, lessons, black power.